This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
On BC Day, over 2 years ago, the largest environmental disaster in British Columbia's history unfolded. A dam at the Mount Polley mine in the Cariboo region broke open, releasing its water and slurry with years' worth of mining waste into Polley Lake. 25 million cubic meters of wastewater and solid mine waste spewed into downstream waters, destroying or permanently affecting aquatic and riparian habitats. This week, Mining Watch Canada filed a private prosecution against the Mount Polley Mining Corporation, but also against the BC government. Mining Watch claims that the massive spill was caused by the negligence of both the province and the mining company. The prosecution is being supported by a wide range of environmental and human rights groups. Dan Lewis of Clackwood Action was in Williams Lake this week for the filing of the case, and he joins us this morning. Hello, Dan.
Good morning.
It's been 30 months since the Mount Polley environmental disaster. Why did Mining Watch bring this case against the provincial government?
Well, you know, you're right. It's been 30 months, and there have been no penalties. Nobody has been found responsible, not the company, nobody in the government. And it's just outrageous. It's the biggest environmental mining disaster in Canadian history, and no one has been held accountable. It really bodes poorly for future mining projects, current mining projects, not to mention the potential for oil spills from pipelines.
Now, why was the court case brought specifically against the provincial government?
Well, the provincial government is ultimately responsible. They're the ones that give the permits to these companies to operate on public lands. And just this May, the Auditor General of BC did an assessment of the Ministry of Environment and Ministry of Mines' ability to look after this. And I just want to quickly read you the punchline from her report. She said, and I'm quoting, "Almost all of our expectations for a robust compliance and enforcement program were not met. The compliance and enforcement activities of both the Ministry of Mines and Ministry of Environment are not set up to protect the province from environmental risks." And so that's why Mining Watch is bringing private prosecution forward. Under the Fisheries Act, any individual can lay charges under the Fisheries Act and bring those to trial.
Now, I understand that it's a private prosecution, as you mentioned, and that a citizen can bring that. Why was that particular approach taken?
Well, there's been two investigations so far, and they have failed to hold anybody accountable. The first thing the government did was they set up a three-person, it was a Mount Polley review panel, and they said that the whole problem with this disaster was that the dam that was holding those tailings was built on a layer of mud, which the company failed to detect before they built the dam. Then they built the dam up higher and higher and higher to contain the water that they didn't expect to have in there. The dam was at a slope that was considered unsafe. The engineer of record walked off the job. They said, "We're no longer going to be responsible for this dam. You're not operating it the way we designed it to be operated." And, the company was found to be mismanaging. They needed to have tailings up against the dam and not water. And they didn't manage that properly. And still, at the end of that, no penalties. So Mining Watch just feels like this is the wrong message to send to other mining companies, and not to mention oil companies in this country, that you can get away with this and there will be no penalties. It's the wrong message to send.
What are the most important questions that we have about the long-term effects of the environment in the area downstream of the mine? What's going on there at this time?
Well, the dam is in the Quesnel River watershed, and You know, I'm from the coast. I've never been up to Williams Lake before, I guess once way long ago. So we went up there right after the disaster. There was a sacred fire lit by some Shwetnik women. And the first person I met at the sacred fire was an old friend, Doug Gook, who's a third generation farmer on the Quesnel River. And he began to describe to me the importance of Quesnel Lake. It's a unique lake. It's one of the 10 deepest lakes in the world. It's home to one quarter of the Fraser River sockeye. So now you have all these toxic tailings in Quesnel Lake continuing to flow into the lake and going down the Quesnel River and then down the Fraser River right towards Vancouver. So all the Fraser River sockeye have to be swimming up through these toxins now, and certainly in Quesnel Lake, all the fish living there are exposed to these toxins. It's going to take years to really determine the full impacts of this disaster.
And what's the impact there for the people who live in that area, and particularly the First Nations?
Well, you know, that was the hardest thing about going up there. I mean, I literally cried for a month after I went there, and meeting the people and going back up this week and seeing some friends again, you know, they're living with the aftermath of this disaster. They used to drink the water out of Quesnel Lake. They were quite proud and happy, and that's why people moved there to live in a place where the water was so clean you could drink out of the lake. And now they won't even go swimming in it. We talked to a friend who said that she has a friend who lets her dog swim in Quesnel Lake, and all the hair fell off the dog. And she's like, "Why is that happening?" And her friend just said, "Well, you know, like your dog is swimming in the lake." So they don't know what's going on. And the government's response was to give people water filters. And we had a guy show up with those water filters. And he said, "Here's a new one and here's a used one." And he said, "I used to replace my filter every 2 years, just kind of out of a feeling of guilt. But now he's replacing them every 2 weeks." And the color difference between the brand new white one and this dirty, dirty brown one, it was unbelievable. That was had been used for 2 weeks. First Nations are completely dependent on salmon, and that's the basis of the culture. And the First Nations have shut down the salmon fishery the year of the disaster. They just would not eat those fish, and I believe to this day people are not fishing for those salmon. It's so uncertain what's going on and what's in the water, and nobody is coming clean. The government is not, and the company is not coming clean.
It's amazing, you know, in that area, because on that day when the disaster happened, I was up canoeing, actually, in Barron Lakes, which is in an adjacent watershed and runs, you know, joins up in the rivers afterwards. And I was there again this year. It's an incredibly beautiful area, yet you look at Mount Polly and what happened there and that tailings enclosure that just let go of all this toxic things. I think it's very shocking that the provincial government hasn't done anything up till now.
It is. You know, the Mount Polly Review Panel issued their report, and it was quite damning. And, you know, one thing that they found was that there are currently 123 active tailing dams in B.C., and what they said was, if performance in the future reflects that in the past, then on average, there will be 2 dam failures every 10 years. And the panel concluded, they firmly rejected, quote, any notion that business as usual can continue. They said that we have to start, when we're assessing dams, we have to look at factors other than the economic factors. In other words, yeah, it's cheaper to do a bad job, but that's not an adequate argument for doing a bad job. We have to look at what does it take to protect the environment, and that's going to be more expensive. And companies that want to continue operating mines in the province are going to have to do it in a way that protects the environment. It's going to be a little bit less profitable, but that's what they're going to have to do. This is what the panel said. It's the end of business as usual. And yet that hasn't been the case. Right after the Mount Polly disaster, the BC government approved a new mine by the same company, Imperial Metals, in the sacred headwaters in the Stikine River. It's called the Red Chris Mine.
Yeah, Dan, I just want to come back to the court case here for a moment. If that case is won in provincial court, can we expect action and remedies for those watersheds as a result?
Well, you know, I don't really know. Like, basically, I think what would happen is the company would be fined. And so if you look at the kinds of fines that are typically levied, you know, it's a joke. Now, this year, Teck, which is one of the biggest mining companies in Canada, they were fined, I think, $8 million for some of their activities in the Kootenays. So it's possible that we could see those kind of numbers in the millions in terms of fines. But then when you look at the cost of cleanup, it's estimated that it'll cost hundreds of millions of dollars. And the BC taxpayers have already paid, I think, $69 million to clean this mess up. Even though our government says polluters pay, the fact is we're picking up the tab on it. So I still think it's worth pursuing because it's going to send a message to companies that they can't operate with impunity.
Why is this case important, Dan?
Well, it's really important because we have a lot of mines in BC and we have salmon everywhere. And, you know, there's the potential for more and more of these failures in the years to come. You know, for me personally, the reason that I went up to Mount Polley is because the same company, Imperial Metals, is looking at opening two mines here in Clackwood Sound. One of them would be 10 kilometers north of Tofino, in full view of the town of Tofino, 3 kilometers away from the village of Ahouset. It's Ahouset territory. And the plans for that mountain, Cat Face Mountain, are very similar to the Mount Polley mine. So, you know, I am terrified that the company might come in here and try to open a mine right in the Clackwood Sound UNESCO Biosphere Reserve.
And if this case is won, what do you think? Do you think that might help turn around this to some extent?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's going to be one more piece of the puzzle, but it will send a very strong message to the companies, again, that they can't operate with impunity, and also to governments that they need to get on their game and prevent these kind of things from happening. They need to be looking after not just the people of BC, but also the environment on which our whole livelihood is based.
Well, Dan, I really appreciate talking with you this morning. And I know we've talked about this many times before about Cat Face and when you were up in Mount Polley before. And I just want to thank you for being out there on the front lines and in this case, for your organization supporting this important action.
Well, thanks so much. And if people want to learn more, they can visit our website, which is clayoquotaction.org.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Thanks, Lorraine. Bye.
Bye-bye. I've been speaking with Dan Lewis of Clackwood Action. You can find out more, as he says, at clackwoodaction.org. You can find out a little bit more detail about the court case at miningwatch.ca.